It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running after a two-day absence while Agnes and I were down in the foothills, the low knee hills of the North Georgia Mountains. We had a magnificent trip. It was a wonderful time. Good friendship and fellowship and merrymaking and laughter, even though Saturday, the biggest, Saturday, yes, been a long time since I've seen that much rain over the course of an entire day. God, it rained and rained and rained and rained, but we stayed inside, and we all had a heck of a fine time. Even at the end of it all, lo and behold, after years and years and years of Mike Malloy talking about gathering around the campfire. Well, a number of truth seekers gathered around the Malloy campfire. It was propane fired, but nonetheless. And there were marshmallows roasted and s'mores were made. And as I said, a good time was had by all. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. The month of December has begun for us. We're back at it. Plenty to talk about on this Moran Monday. But of course, as is always the case, there are thanks to be sent out over the course of the weekend, and so thanks go out to our dear friends of long standing, Gene and Ann across the pond. Thank you to Janice very kindly. Thank you, Janice. Thanks very kindly to John, and thank you to our buddy Stephen, a sort of surreptitious member of the fraternity of Steve. And thanks very kindly to Renee in D.C. That's this morning. And then, as of yesterday, thanks go out to our buddy Paul in Arizona. Thanks to Dave. Thank you very kindly, Dave. Thank you to Elizabeth, to our buddy Reggie. And thanks very kindly indeed to Rocco. Thank you, Rocco. Then there's... Then there is Saturday, and thanks very kindly to Rusty. Thank you, Rusty, and thank you to our pal at Home Dirts. Thanks very kindly to Joseph. Thank you very much to Kay for being a partial sponsor of the program, and to Smitty as well in Florida. Thank you to Peter. Thank you to our far-frozen... Albertan Canadian correspondent Lauren, and thank you very kindly to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thank you very kindly, one and all. We are off and running for a brand new month. That means that this being the first broadcast of the month of December brings Shirley's Challenge. And that means that there's $200 on the table this evening, courtesy of Gary and our pal Ralphs and one other person who prefers to remain Nani, a Nanamoose, So that's of course a remembrance of our buddy Bruce, who began Shirley's challenge to get the month off to a roaring start. So if we can raise $200 this evening, those $200 will get doubled, courtesy of the aforementioned on this, the first broadcast of the evening or the month, and Shirley's challenge. Thank you, one and all. If you want to help out, run over to headon.live. The PayPal button is there, as is the Patreon button, and we'll do our thank yous for Patreon here in a day or so, once that all gets folded and spindled and mutilated and forwarded along. Hey, thank you very kindly to Glenn for getting started. Glenn just doubled his contribution. Thank you, Glenn. That means we've got $190 to go this evening to finish off the challenge. Thank you, Glenn, very much indeed. Let's see. I've been gone a while. 2 days feels like forever, but I want to send out just a general shout out to everybody who showed up, and it was what a pleasure it was to meet so many names that I and start and be able to put faces to them. It was a wonderful time, and at the risk of leaving anyone out, I won't mention a bunch of names, because as soon as I start going down the list, I will forget one, and I will feel terrible. Well, okay, there are some that I have to mention, and that is to say, I got to meet Steve from Georgistan and Miss Karen. Little Cletus and little Twiggy had to stay at home, but I got to meet Steve and Miss Karen. Of course, Chris from Germany was there, and oh, golly Moses, you want to talk about hitting it off as if they were sisters from separate mothers? My goodness gracious sakes alive, Agnes and Chris, well, God Almighty, and Agnes has a new hobby now. The Viking Warrior Princess has a new hobby, as introduced to her by Chris, whom we will refer to as the Queen of Caffeine. It's called Find the Next Starbucks, because when Chris arrived from Germany, she was running on fumes, to say the least. And with that in mind, Chris needed caffeine. And then Chris started turning on Agnes, and Agnes was throwing back espresso shots with the cream and whipped cream and whatnot, with wild and reckless abandon as we wandered around the hills of North Georgia. It was a trip. And of course, I got to meet Billable Rick and the lovely Star, and there was just much merrymaking. Paul from Fremont was there. This is what happens. You start making a list, and you. All I can say, and then the event itself was wonderful, and the excerpts that Mike shared from his book were captivating and engaging, and just a delight. And then there was barbecue, and Kathy made pie, and Kathy made cobblers. And I can assure you that Kathy makes some of the meanest sausage gravy you will. Oh, it was good. It was so good. So we had a blast. And I'll tell you, Steve has, Steve from Georgistan, on a number of occasions said, Bob, we got to do one of these. We got to do one of these up there in West Virginia. It'd be a blast. Do it there near the bridge. And he got the wheels turning. I don't know how we could ever pull it off, but it would be a blast. You know, the great, the great horn in. But a lot goes into that. I mean, Kathy and Mike worked themselves darn near crazy. Putting that together, and it was a heroic effort. So not to be entered into lightly, sort of like marriage. But worth thinking about. Worth thinking about. So where do we find ourselves this evening now that, let's see, did anything happen while I was gone? I was kind of unplugged. Wasn't paying a whole lot of attention to stuff because I figured everything, you know, the country's stable, there are no problems, everybody's happy. Okay. I guess we have to get this out of the way. Once again, I find myself in the position of having to take the advice of Thumper's mother in Bambi. Thumper, what have I told you? If you can't say anything nice, don't say nothing at all. And, of course, I refer to the passing of George H.W. Bush at the tender age of 94. Cut down in his prime. Yeah. And now we are in the midst of a grief orgy. And I guess this is just how official Washington handles things. And how the millionaire for-profit media handle things. Because in the passing of George H.W. Bush, it seems that we have been hit on the head with a rock and experienced a breathtaking degree of collective amnesia. For just a little bit, just so you'll know, we were absolutely zonked yesterday when we got out of Atlanta. So we went about halfway up the road and knocked off for the evening in Northeast Tennessee. Making West Virginia an easy reach this morning. And so as we got up this morning, back at it, you know, coffee breaks over, back on your head. So I turned on my filthy morning habit. And there it was, my dose of morning hagiography. At which point, I forget which of the newlyweds it was who mentioned it, but somebody said, and then there was the SNL crisis he had to deal with. And they skipped blithely along, and, you know, I can get away with barking and shouting and hooting like a barn owl here at the mansion, but I generally think that they don't take kindly to it in the motel rooms along the road. So I resisted the urge, but Jesus Christ, how do you blow through the SNL crisis and never say the words Neil Bush? Randy in PA. Oh, come on, Bob. I want to hear the song by Chumbawamba. you know the song Randy wants to. Yeah, the day the Nazi died. But see, maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's part of the collective amnesia. Maybe we would have a more honest recollection of the life and times of George H.W. Bush if the guy in the White House wasn't the guy in the White House. Who, incidentally, in noting the passing of George H.W. Bush, managed to, well, fuck that up too. I was really looking forward to giving a statement after the G20 in Argentina, but I won't because Bush had to die. So we're going to shut the stock market down on December 5th in his honor. Now that in itself is a thing of note. And perhaps it's the most appropriate thing to do with the passing of the patriarch of La Familia Bush. Shut down the stock market for a day. you know, because capitalism. But I don't know. I don't know how you mention the savings and loan crisis without mentioning Neil Bush, because of course, somehow or another, no matter how dirty Neil was in that whole thing, he managed to come out of it miraculously and mysteriously unscathed. Yeah. And then there was another statement made. Oh, what was it? What was it? What was it? It'll come back to me in a minute. But this is all in line with something, with a note, the official every damn day note from Ron in Raleigh. Let the hagiography begin, Ron writes. As you know, George H.W. Poppy Bush went on to his long home this past Friday. As far as the Bush clan is concerned, H.W. is the least detestable, and that's going all the way to Prescott. On NPR yesterday, C. Boyden Gray was on, waxing eloquent about what a great guy H.W. was. When asked about his appointment of Slappy Thomas, Mr. Gray said he thought that Anita Hill was lying and that Dr. Christine Blasey Ford was lying as well. When asked about the Willie Horton ad, he said Bush never apologized for that piece of blatant racism. Bush was the head of the CIA, which is enough for me to be glad he's gone. His ramping up of the war on drugs, Iran-Contra, the pardoning of all the criminals involved in that fiasco, the fact that the immigrant caravan is a direct result of the Reagan-Bush regime's policies, tons of drugs from that adventure ended up on the streets of American cities, the false flag action in Panama to arrest his former employee, Manuel Noriega, where somewhere near 3,000 innocent Panamanians died for no reason. I could go on, but it seems fruitless. He's still going to lie in state and be honored as a great American hero. On another front, Mike Pompeo, you know, he was first in class at yada, 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 condemned Iran for conducting a ballistic missile test in what he says was the contravention of a UN resolution, which it wasn't. He was talking about the five-party nuclear accord that the U.S. has backed out of, an actual contravention of the nuclear pact. Funny how that happens. As I've said before, the U.S. and Israel want Iran to unilaterally disarm and be at the tender mercies of Bibi and the bloodthirsty Likud party every damn day, Bob. Every damn day. P.S., hope you had a great time in the North Georgia mountains. It was wonderful. And Helen is a very, very pretty place. There just wasn't enough time. There just wasn't enough time. So, you know, goodbye, George H.W. Bush. Oh, that was the other thing. I forget who it was that was asked the question. Richard Haass, I think it was. What do you think it would have been like if George H.W. Bush had gotten a second term? And on that one, I did hop up and down a little bit. Because, well, frankly, Bill Clinton was the second George H.W. Bush term. When you think about how Bill Clinton governed, it's hard not to reach that conclusion. Would George H.W. Bush have said, "Well, gosh almighty, no, we can't have that. We can't have welfare reform. This will not stand. This aggression against poor people will not stand." Hell no, he would have signed off on that in a second. And the so-called crime bill was a Republican wish list. Now, granted, he wouldn't have been in office in time for the Telecommunications Act of 1996, or, well, you know, maybe, yeah, right at the end. But that was a nice piece of Republican legislation, all of which was eagerly signed by Bill Clinton. I think there's an argument to be made that we did have a second Bush term, and it was the first term of the Clinton presidency. Or at the very least, might as well have been. Subject line, come on, Bob. Darlene in Connecticut says, as I am not allowed to use the Bob 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 meme for fear of some sort of intellectual property infringement, but don't you know that George H.W. Bush will go down in history as the greatest one-term president ever per son of George W.? Hagiography notwithstanding, I would argue that Jimmy Carter was the greatest one-term president ever. Glad you and Agnes are back. Felt the drought acutely on Thursday and Friday. Well, as a matter of fact, I felt the drought, too, because Thursday, long about airtime, we were just zipping along the highway down through South Carolina Stan, and I looked at Agnes and said, reckon we should fire up Facebook and just do a program for the from the road? And then we talked ourselves out of it. Actually, we didn't talk ourselves out of it. Agnes just said no. Accompanied by Bob, you're driving, pay attention to the road. These people are crazy. Which is true. I mean, Well, what we did is we got off of I-81 and took I-26 down through, because I'd never seen that little chunk of the world, I-26 down through Elizabethton and Asheville and then down into South Carolina, crossed through some beautiful Appalachian Mountains, fortunate enough not to have a bunch of fucking coal under them. And it was kind of gray and everything, but it was... Those mountains are magnificent in the gloom, and they can get gloomy. Yeah, I know. Marty letting me know the high quality MP3 stream is not streaming over on TuneIn. And sorry, and White Rose, I don't know why. I have no earthly idea why. So we'll just. It is what it is. Meanwhile, a note coming in from Scott in San Diego. Also, no U.S. mail on Wednesday. I think it's more about screwing the USPS than it has anything to do with honoring George H.W. Bush. P.S. I'm in a huge line at the post office now. Everybody and their ugly dog decided to be here today. This is a big overtime month for the U.S. Postal Service, so this was a great way to screw some people out of some money at the Christmas season. As to George H.W. Bush, Brother Deacon Asa with an observation, I wouldn't piss on him if he was on fire, but there's an objective scientific metric for why George H.W. was not as despicable or pig-licking as we'd like to think he was. H.W. wasn't filthy and racist enough for the Republicans to hand him a second term. So there's that. Arguably, that might be true. Although the Republicans more or less didn't forgive him for his read my hips, no new taxes, and the whole sort of patrician cluelessness that he demonstrated, that didn't resonate well. By the way, speaking of which, up on a hilltop somewhere in the wilds of East Tennessee, there's a giant flagpole with a giant devil's diaper flying atop it. Mm-hmm. Agnes snapped a picture as we came along. And since it is Morin Monday, there's another photo. This is capitalism, the free market in action. Oh, I forget where exactly we were, but just out of the corner of my eye, I saw something. I said, you gotta photograph that. And it was just an ordinary rectangular building with a sort of plastered facade. And on its narrow end facing us, in big, bold, capital black letters across a white background, just the single word, guns. But then on the side that faces the highway, another sign that says, we buy guns. And then in all caps, but with red letters on a white background, Jesus is Lord. Yes, Jesus is Lord. We buy guns. Just in case it don't, just in case the whole salvation thing don't take. Mm-hmm. And as is always the case, any trip south for me is has a bit of the anthropological about it. It's been a few years since, I mean, I've flown in and out of Atlanta a bunch, but just to get out and toddle around Atlanta, it's been 3 years. And that place is booming. Of course, it was extra super double special plus good busy this past weekend because of a certain football match that took place between the universities of Alabama and Georgia. The faith, many were the doubters. Many were the faithless in amongst the gathered folks there at the Maloyalist retreat. The third quarter ended, and being the only Alabama fan in the room, as far as I could tell, because we had it on sound down, but had the game on, people watching. And I just did what every good Alabama fan does when Alabama is behind going into the fourth quarter. I put my four fingers in the air. What that stands for is the fourth quarter belongs to Alabama. And so it did. And there are Georgia fans who looked at each other and did the surrender cobra and asked each other the question, the hell was going on with that fake punt? Why did Kirby Smart call that fake punt? At which point, Almighty God, in his heaven, looked over to Bear Bryant and said, yeah, Bear, why did we call that fake punt? And that was the end of that. So Nick Saban wins again. And I tried to be not jumping up and down or anything or rubbing anybody's noses in it, but, you know, I knew. And so now we wait a month for a still mythical national champion to be crowned. Yes, 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 I realize there are people tuning away even as I speak because I've mentioned something as plebeian as college football. But, well, it's unavoidable. What else? Well, more in Monday. Jesus is Lord. We buy guns. But it was a fun trip and a fascinating trip. And a thought-provoking one as well. Because in those mountains of North Georgia, there's no coal. Like I said, there's no coal. They're not cursed with coal under their mountains. So consequently, there's no one there blasting the living bejesus out of them. And instead, they have turned to tourism and ecotourism as a way to provide some level of economic viability in the area. And it sure did look like they had it going on in Helen. You know, it's kind of kitschy, faux, fake Bavarian village. But it's sweet to see something like that. And I thought, you know, just how many places in West Virginia could be like that or some variation on the theme if we weren't busy trying to destroy it for all we're worth. Oh, I had no idea. Steve had reminded me of the place, but he said, guns, bullets, and opioids, hot damn. We were 10 minutes away from the one-stop pharmacy that sells drugs, bullets, and guns. If we'd had more time, I would have taken you there. I would have loved to have seen it. That would have been part of my anthropological notes. Clarence with a note says, Bush legacy, I hope he rests in peace. The move that will stick with me is the nomination of Uncle Clarence Thomas. What a terrible historical blunder. Thurgood Marshall replaced with that POS. Well, there are a number of millstones that are probably hanging about his neck. If there's a great judgment day, there's a few things to be answered for. If you believe in ghosts and things like that, I prefer to think that his shade has been met by the shades of a few raped, murdered nuns, and maybe a murdered priest or two, and some murdered peasants from, say, El Salvador and Nicaragua. Because, of course, central to the election of George H.W. Bush as President of the United States was his insistence that he knew nothing about the arms for hostages swaps or the illegal diversion of funds to the Nicaraguan Contras. Years and years and years ago, I had an off-the-record conversation with a leader of the Contras who said, he knew everything. Huh. So he's got that to work with, too. David in South Carolina says, your route, that's Bomber Eric Rudolph habitat up through there where you were coming down from Asheville. Used to be a bunch of little camps through there. Used to worship at little churches through there while on the run, thus gods and guns. Oh, yeah, and yesterday being Sunday, there was no way I was not going to turn on the radio and catch some of the, you know, if you just see, like, your really slick, smooth, polished, evangelical preachers on TV, you're missing all the fun, because just as in baseball, the religion industry can be a lot more fun if you go to the minor league games. And we heard Agnes and I, the side eye I got. I said, "No, honey, we can't hit the scan button. I got to hear this." Because it was awesome. One of them come out of Chilhowee, Virginia. And another one came out of somewhere in Tennessee. And they were on fire, brethren and sistren. Anybody who thinks that the little bit of shtick that I do on prayer meeting Wednesdays is somehow made up, I can't even touch those guys. They're amazing. And we enjoyed the, well, I enjoyed. Agnes did a lot of cringing. And by the way, thanks to John. John jumped in this evening, so we are 180 bucks away from meeting Shirley's Memorial Challenge for this first broadcast of the month of December. Happy holidays to everybody, whatever it is you celebrate, or even if you don't celebrate anything. Yeah. So, like I said, there's an anthropological aspect to my, and there was one story that I ran across because, all kidding aside, I didn't completely disconnect. I mean, when you got Mike Malloy, Tara Devlin, and little old me in the same room, we're going to talk about the things that we talk about. It can't, and a room full of truth seekers, too, going, yeah, but what about? And I ran across one story that just seemed like it had to happen. It just had to happen for Moran Monday. And this goes, Agnes and I were talking about it on the way home and coming up with it, with a name for what we were thinking about. Because I think about stuff. I do. I can't help it. And I try to think about things that would fix rather obvious problems in this country. And it begins with something we were talking about on the way southward, and that is this, the general idea of good governance. See, if you're Republican, you don't believe that any governance is ever good. And once again, and this plays into the whole the George H.W. Bush passing thing, one of the things that's being passed off in the millionaire for-profit media right now is this idea that there's somehow a difference between the Republican Party that propelled George H.W. Bush and by extension Ronald Reagan to victory and the Republican Party that put Donald Trump in the White House. And to anyone who would say that there is, I would say that they need to they need to put down that 750 milliliter bottle of wood alcohol and maybe take in a meeting or two. Because they're monumentally fucked up. Yeah, what do I mean by that? Well, again, the Willie Horton ad. That should be the two words, Willie Horton, should be carved onto George H.W. Bush's headstone. Plain and simple. Oh, by the way, how many living presidents do we have now? Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Vladimir Putin. Yeah, that's five. David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out the subject line, Bush, Lee Atwater, Roger Stone, rat fuckers. They worked with Bush. They worked, well, I mean, not Lee Atwater. He couldn't work with Trump. He's all busy being dead. But Republicans, whether they be Reagan Republicans or Trump Republicans or any Republicans in between, don't believe in the idea that there can be good government. Remember what Ronnie Reagan said? The most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And all the Republicans, they just clapped and clapped and clapped because they loved it when he said that. But good governance is possible. Perfect governance is not. But a good faith effort at doing the best for the greatest number of people is a thing. It can be experienced, say, or viewed in places like California, Oregon, Washington. Even in the People's Republic of Massachusetts, which presently has a Republican governor who would probably not be welcome as a Republican anywhere but Massachusetts. Connecticut tries. Vermont tries. You could largely say that, you know, New England tries and gets probably closer than anybody else because they're engaged in a little, in at least a passing interest in democracy. But the question that I was asking, and since we went down when we did so we could pick Chris up at the airport and then, you know, head back up into the North Georgia mountains. And we discussed this at length. Is good governance even possible in the South? And the only way we'll ever find out is if they ever bother to try it. But you can make an argument that they really never have. Once in a while, a state like North Carolina would take a run at it. in Alabama, as crazy as it may seem, George C. Wallace created a firestorm when he proposed the idea that the state of Alabama furnish textbooks for the use of all of its public school students. There were those who hollered socialism and communism and were quite sure that making sure that every student had access to the necessary textbooks to do their schoolwork would somehow lead to the end of the United States, or in probably many of their minds, the Confederate States of America. People don't value education if they get the books given to them for free. They need to work at it. I remember recently, in the last year and a half or so, when the idea of free college tuition was brought up to Joe Manchin here in West Virginia. He said that if people didn't have to go into crippling levels of debt in order to get a college education, why, they wouldn't appreciate the education what they got. How about that? 50 years between the people who opposed George Wallace's idea of free textbooks and Joe Manchin saying it. I guess that's why Joe Manchin's Joe Manchin. But good governance. And Megan with an email says, subject line, small government. Republicans believe in small or no governance, except when it comes to a woman making decisions about her uterus or what the official language should be and who should marry whom. Yeah, they want a small government, and they want it small enough to fit right into a woman's fallopian tubes. That's a tiny, tiny little government. And of course, Republicans like to quote that line from Thomas Jefferson where he said, I got to work on that government governs best, which governs least. Jefferson was reported to have a high, thin, reedy voice. That's my attempt at a high, thin, reedy voice there. And they cite that as an example of a reason not to have good governance. And what sent me off, what really set me off, though, was something that that I read yesterday. After all these years of hooting and hollering and braying and barking about voter fraud, well, it turns out we found some, damn it. Mark Harris is going to be a member of the House of Representatives of the United States from North Carolina. The North Carolina 9th Congressional District. And he just barely squeaked in because, well, he's a weird son of a bitch, Mark Harris is, self-made. He's a Baptist minister. And he ain't brooking no apostasy. And he's preached a number of sermons over the years on the need for the woman to submit unto her husband as the church submits to Almighty God. I mean, it's right there in Second Flip-Floppians. You can find it. It says so. I'm not gonna subject you to the audio of it. There's too much of it, and this. But yeah, he somehow or another eked his way into the Congress, and it's the or other part of somehow or other to which we address ourselves here. Mark Harris, the Reverend Mark Harris, who is going to get his back trotters in the trough once he gets up to the House of Representatives. He has the air of he reminds me of what Shakespeare said about Cassius, a lean and hungry look. And I suspect he's going to try to position himself as a leader of the, even though he's a freshman, he's going to try to Gingrich himself. And that was another part of the trip. We passed through Gwinnett County a couple of times, and I couldn't help looking at that Gwinnett County sign and thinking, I hold this county personally responsible for a hell of a lot of what happened to this country in the last 30 years that was initiated and driven by a nasty little demagogue that they sent to the House of Representatives by the name of Newt Gingrich. But back to North Carolina. Mark Harris won by 905 votes. Well, there were 1,300 absentee ballots in that election. And operatives for Mark Harris appear to have gone around, especially to elderly black voters, to mess with their absentee ballots. Here's a couple of statements. One woman said, on Wednesday evening, about 2 weeks from today's date, which was October 12, 2018, a young white lady came by and asked for my absentee ballot. She stated that she was collecting people's ballots in the area. She had just come from another lady's house. I filled out two names on the ballot, Hakeem Brown for sheriff and Vince Rozier for Board of Education. She stated the others weren't important. I gave her the ballot, and she said she would finish it herself. I signed the ballot, and she left. It was not signed at any time. And here's another elderly African-American voter who had hoped to vote by absentee ballot. Young lady whom I positively identified by a choice of four pictures came to my house the Sunday after Hurricane Florence and told me that she was assigned to this district to collect absentee ballots. I filled out the ballot while she waited outside and gave it to her when she came back. She took the ballot and put it in an envelope and never sealed it or asked me to sign it. Then she left. Because of the way she presented herself, I thought she was legitimate. There were 1,300 ballots in that district, and Mark Harris won by 905 votes. Let's take a moment with that, shall we? One of the problems with our electoral system is that people, and by people I use the term loosely because I mean Republicans, know, they don't believe, they know, that they can do just about anything they want to monkey wrench an election and never pay a price. And thus, they do it. If it turns out that somebody wins an election by dirty dealings done like this, well, you can't unring a bell, and there's no sense in closing the barn door after the horse is gone. So good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Baptist minister Mark Harris is going to go to Washington, D.C., having cheated in order to be able to do so. And so I have read from in different places that one of the goals of this new Democratic House is to revitalize the Voting Rights Act. I think that is a noble goal and one that is long, long past due. But I will also suggest that we need to take a long, hard look at how we at the actual mechanics of elections. The idea that a couple of pretty little white girls who seemed, of course, you know, innocuous and right, trading on gender stereotypes, went around, because there's no way they only went to two women and or two elderly African Americans. If you went to two, you went to 20, and if you went to 20, you probably went to 1,300. And I will, while I'm not a big fan of the so-called criminal justice system, I might be persuadable if we could put a little more justice into the criminal justice system. What do you think? Long ago, there's a legend, I guess we'd call it, that people caught taking bribes in the ancient Roman Republic would be put in a burlap sack with a fox and have the bag tied off and throw them in the Tiber River and, well, let them just bob down the river that way. It did not end well for the person accused of bribery. We need something on the order of those federal sentencing guidelines that that Republicans have liked to make Saddam harsh because that meant that they could go back to the rubes in the district and say, I'm tough on crime. And all of those tough on crime laws seem to somehow or another always disproportionately affect the poor and the darker of skin toned. It's time that worm turned. And so for this pretty little white girl who did this nasty business, well, beyond a reasonable doubt, she or they should probably spend about the next 25 years in a federal maximum security prison, turning great big rocks into sand by hand. And you know how Republicans are always saying, well, you got to make the punishments harsh so that you can deter future criminal action. Well, I can't think of a better example of the need for tough criminal laws to deter future criminal action than messing with the very essence of what we consider to be Republican self-governance. Or, if we want to play with the word a little bit, democracy. You reckon them pretty little white girls would have gone out and engaged in those absentee ballot shenanigans in North Carolina if they'd thought there was even a 1 in 100 chance that they'd be caught and they'd spend the next 25 years mandatory minimum finding out that orange is the new black is not near as cool in prison in the real world as it was on the electric TV box? You reckon? Because from where I'm looking at it, it seems to me that subverting the electoral process actually has a lot more deleterious effect on our body politic and, in fact, our society as a whole than, say, somebody getting caught with a couple of grams of weed in their pocket in one of those hellhole states where a couple of grams of weed in your pocket will get you sent to the big house for a long time. So, and I want your input on this. I think it would be fun if we kind of brainstormed this. What I'm calling this, and I'm calling it this for a reason. I want it to call up memories that perhaps have long been forgotten. I'm calling this idea, and granted, it's just a tiny little radio show, so it's not like it's going to get out there and become part of the national conversation. You know, unless one of those people who quietly listens to the program goes, hey, that's a pretty good idea. One of those people. Hi. I'm calling this Reconstruction 2.0. The Reconstruction that was never completed. And, of course, the reason Reconstruction came to mind was because I was traveling through Andrew Johnson country. You know, the guy who became president after John Wilkes Booth did what John Wilkes Booth did, murdering Abraham Lincoln. It's one of those little pivot points in history. Abraham Lincoln, upon seeking re-election, decided that since he figured that there was a decent chance of the North finally prevailing over the South in the Civil War, he thought his ticket would look a little bit more palatable if he had some sort of a Southerner on the ticket with him. His previous vice president had been Hannibal Hamlin. But for his second term, he ditched Hannibal Hamlin of Maine and instead chose a man who was barely literate, who came from the hills of East Tennessee, which had been a bit of a Union redoubt during the Civil War. East Tennessee did not side eagerly with the planter class in that little dust-up. But he chose a man that liked to tipple his liquor a little bit, who came to literacy late in life. They say he was taught to read by his wife. And that man was Andrew Johnson. And, of course, Andrew Johnson got his ass impeached because he didn't want to follow through on actually making sure that the laws that were passed to bring the South into compliance were fully and faithfully executed. And he was saved from being removed from office by one vote during the trial in the Senate. Funny how we keep coming back to impeachment. But we need, the South needs, if they are ever to experience good governance, if they are ever to be taught that good governance is possible, we need Reconstruction 2.0. Once I got into Georgia and started scanning the radio dial, it, by the way, all up and down, all over the Southeast, radio, commercial radio is a fucking wasteland. But we knew that. I heard an ad. And it was, see, Georgia is voting again tomorrow. Because they've got more runoffing to do. And there was an ad for, and I saw a bunch of his signs in and around and about Georgia. So it must be some sort of statewide office or something. And it was by another man who's already in the legislature, a white man. And I can't remember his name. But the radio ad went something like this. Howdy. Hi. My name is Billy Joe Buttplug, and I'm a member of the Georgia Legislature. And I just wanted you to know that in my 10 years in the Georgia Legislature, that I done figured out that you got to be straight with people when you're in the Georgia, when you're in government. If you ain't going to be straight with people, ain't no sense in doing it. And that's why I'm here to tell you that I want you to vote for Jimbo Reppersbarger. Because Jimbo Reppersbarger has integritude. Okay, the silly voice notwithstanding, he really used the word integritude. And so, when you go to vote on Georgia on December the 4th, remember Jimbo Reppersbarger and all the integritude he's going to bring to state government. Thank you, and God bless. I'm figuring this guy's got to be a Republican. Maybe he's not. But anybody that's got integritude, probably going to be a Republican. Remember, we were talking about good governance. And the story out of North Carolina just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. The people who went around and hoodooed the absentee ballots, well, that was a contractor. And there's big news afoot because the North Carolina Board of Elections said it ain't going to certify the results of the election because of the investigation into possible election fraud and ballot tampering. It gets messier and messier and messier by the minute. 162 absentee ballot envelopes from North Carolina's congressional district. And they all, according to an election law expert, fit into a pattern of fraud. A pretty little white girl on most of them is named Lisa Britt. Mm-hmm. several people witnessed more than 40 ballots each. And it all comes from an independent contractor for the Harris campaign. Remember, Harris is a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, Christian Baptist minister. He hired Leslie McCray Dowless. And he's got a rap sheet that includes felony fraud. And he's been known in the past to pay people for each absentee ballot they could collect. The nature of the scam was to obtain absentee ballots, fill them out, and cast their votes on someone else's behalf. And not only did good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian, Baptist minister Mark Harris, who thinks that the women folk should remain silent in church and submit to their husbands. That just sounds kinky as shit, doesn't it? He recommended this fraud merchant to other candidates, and at least 9 Republican candidates hired this guy for so-called get-out-the-vote work. So later this month, the North Carolina Board of Elections is going to hold a hearing. Yeah, what will come of that? Who knows? But there will be testimony as to exactly what went on. And like I said, this Dallas character needs to go to... But it's, you know, 1 to 3 at a minimum security. No. You mess with the most essential function of what of the idea of self-governance, and you need to spend a long, long, long time. In a not very nice prison. Going back to the Bushes, a note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, I mostly feel bad for, first allow me to note that I look at W and can see he's crushed at losing his father. I feel bad for him. Wait, what? But that's who I am. I'm quick to empathize. Then I remember simultaneously how W got us into the war with Iraq because Saddam supposedly dissed his daddy. God, and I'm an agnostic. I cringe at these hazy gray areas of life. Quite honestly, however, my heart truly goes out to that $30,000-plus service dog, the young lab that's clearly missing his charge. I've been looking for him in the press coverage after seeing that poignant photo of how he kept vigil lying next to HW's coffin. And when it comes to the pups, they love us unconditionally. That young lab doesn't know or understand politics and all the not-so-good things his master did. To him, his master was all good. I hope the Bushies donate him to someone else in need of such a dog. You can see the pup wants to serve, truly serve. Maybe I'm being shallow for my heart going out to the dog. I don't think you are, Darlene. But ironically, or maybe presciently, I've been thinking for the past few months about what my later years will be like as my FSH muscular dystrophy progresses and whether I might need a service dog. I have 2 small pups I love dearly, but they're 11 and 9 years old respectively, and can't imagine life without them, but they're not service dogs. I live in service to them. LOL. I know I will most likely outlive them. If I'm fortunate enough to get a service dog in my later years, well, that'll be the best part of growing old. P.S. I await the day when a deceased president decides to break with tradition and get cremated instead of doing things the old-fashioned way. In the cold, cold ground, tons of dirt atop, worms decay. It's all kind of, well, yuck. I get that, Darlene. I go back and forth on the whether to on the cremation versus burial, but I'm also an egomaniac who wants. I want an obelisk over me. I just do. Can't help it. Yeah, meanwhile, Ron in the far frozen north says, "Perhaps I have a dark side to my psyche, but I captioned that photo of the service dog with, who's next?" Last name Trump, you say? I know. And look, as to the distinction between cremation or burial, I'm gonna when it comes to Trump, when he goes to his long home, I'm gonna take the position of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, and suggest that the mortal remains of Donald J. Trump be thrown in a toxic waste burial and dumped in the Mariana Trench. That's what he wanted for Richard Nixon. Frankly, I don't want him shot into space because, well, you remember the first Star Trek movie in V'ger, right? Yeah, I'm definitely back. And I've got laser beams. Right? Well, hey, let's run over and, I thought about him as we went down the road. If I'd had more time, I would have stopped and visited and taken barbecue. I really, really would have. Let's check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, man. What's up?
Oh, not much, man. How about you?
I'm okay. I'm glad you guys made it back safely and all that good jazz.
I know you and David aren't too far apart, David in South Carolina, Stan, mm-hmm. and I was thinking, damn, if I could just get off the road here. And it's always that way. If only there was a little more time.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen one day. You touched a lot of bases here. And you said some things. I don't think too many people know about this. It's so much. Too many people know about this offer for money. You mentioned a specific figure, $40,000.
Well,
to engage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, service dogs ain't cheap.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant maybe I misunderstood you. I meant like 10 minutes ago. Someone paid $40,000 to engage in border fraud.
I'm not sure exactly what the money was, but he paid. I don't think I said 40,000, but no, there's over 40 ballots. Maybe you heard ballots.
Oh, over 40 ballots.
Yeah, okay. three people signed more than, or no, several people signed over 40 ballots. As a witness, and the one name that keeps coming up is the nice little white girl, Lisa Britt.
Mm-hmm. She needs to be prosecuted. I'm just saying that is we've become too comfortable with this.
Yeah, and Lisa Britt of 303 Pecan Street, 3F, Bladenboro, North Carolina, 28320.
No, you didn't.
It's public record. It's all over the internet.
Oh, my God.
And the reason she signed it was, I certify that I am at least 18 years old. I am not disqualified from witnessing the ballot described in the warning on the flap of the envelope. The voter marked the enclosed ballot in my presence or caused it to be marked in the voter's presence according to his or her instruction. The voter signed this absentee application and certificate or caused it to be signed. I respect the secrecy of the ballot and voter's privacy unless I assisted the voter at his or her request.
Okay, so you've seen this woman. That's what you keep saying. She's the way she looks, she appears. Okay.
Well, I mean, she's described by one of the people she defrauded, allegedly, as a nice little white girl.
Mm-hmm. See, that's where that Laura Ingraham and what's the Lauren woman. They have a negative influence on these people. I'm not going to spend a lot of your time. I'm really not. But you see, when you started talking about this, I said, wait a minute. Okay, you drove down through it. I'm thinking how terrible the drivers are here. It's awful. And then I'm thinking about the I-26, I-20 corridor, which is, they call it the clusterfuck. It's terrible. Because I-26, when you hit in the northern part of South Carolina, is trucker. It's trucker stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you have your wits about you because, you know, there's a lot of car chases. A lot goes on.
Oh, the reason I took that route was because I thought it might be a little less insane than, say, the racetrack that exists around Knoxville or, God knows, the racetrack around Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll never do it again. Despite, you know, and that's the upcountry part of South Carolina, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, it comes down to the upstate, and then the 26 goes down through Lexington, and then, but before you get to Lexington, which is one of the most Republican places on earth, by the way, there's a I-26 meets I-20, and they didn't build a highway properly, and it's dicey.
Well, never in over 200 years has South Carolina experienced anything resembling good governance. Never. Ever.
No, I like your theme tonight. Your theme tonight is right on. And I'll be succinct. Let me get to this. Right. So you got me looking. I said, okay, nice. I've been hearing about the Ninth Circuit and they've engaged in voter fraud. And I mean, this is unheard. I wonder, what was the last time we heard about something this deep in terms of a state election? In terms of fraud and malfeasance and misconduct,
this is pretty shocking. But then again, it's Republican electoral politics, which probably means that, let's use the cockroach standard, Todd.
Uh-oh.
You know the cockroach standard, right?
Crazier than a spray cockroach?
No. Okay, let's narrow it down. We'll call this Mama's cockroach standard. Growing up in the South, if my mother ever saw one goddamn roach, she went to war. And she would look at me and say, if you see one, you've got 1,000. And so if we apply the cockroach standard to Mark Harris, if one did it, if one Republican did it, odds are, dozens did it.
Oh my God! Okay, so that's the one. That's the one that was caught.
Right.
Okay. See, I was just so disgusted by the whole thing. I kind of tuned out. But
Republican schemes and Republican ideas travel through a network, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for this. So, for instance, according to the Charlotte Observer. In the last 20 years, the independent contractor that Mark Harris hired and whom Mark Harris went on to recommend to other candidates, he's been paid by at least 9 different candidates for this, you know, for what probably is this self same kind of shit.
Okay, so he said, we're doing this here. This is what you guys do. This is what we're doing.
He got taken down. He was flat convicted in 1992 in Iredell County. For fraud. Felony fraud. He and his wife took out an insurance policy on a dead man and then collected $165,000.
Oh my God, that was the guy. Okay, I heard a half of that story.
But he only had to do 6 months out of a two-year hitch.
This is the same incident where they paid like one or two payments on the policy.
I don't have those details here, but they.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, either way.
And by the way, he's also been convicted of felony perjury.
why are all these people so snaky?
Why are all these people working for Republicans? Wait, let's drill down another level, Todd. Why is this guy working for a Republican Baptist minister?
Because they're all sneaky. This hurts. This is painful.
I'll work with you. So it hurts and so it's painful. Here's the question: is it surprising?
A little bit. It's so far over the edge. A little bit. It is. I mean, this is well, you actually said it. Like, who's going to stop us? These people, they think that no one is going. We have to stand. We have to demand equal justice now.
Well, but hold up.
These people
I mean,
are brazen and craven.
So we've talked about, but I don't want to. I don't want to go through this and forget about the precious little white girl.
Well, see, I don't want to get into that. I don't want to lose my strength in my argument.
You're not. She's the one who actually committed the crime.
And I know what you're saying. Just unsuspecting little knocks on the door. I'm just a college student and I need to get. And see, this is what happened. I just looked on Wikipedia. Looked at the new. It says it's redrawn since 2016, the 9th district. And it looks like a sane. I was like, wait a minute. This doesn't look like a salamander. This looks like a normal, you know, bottom half of where North and South Carolina meet. And I've been through almost all of those areas. And that's the reason I'm calling. I've been through almost all of those areas. This is critical. See, this is the way this shit is supposed to fucking look. You've got it covers part of Charlotte suburbs, maybe Charlotte proper. I don't know because the map didn't blow up enough. But it's clearly at least part of Charlotte suburbs all the way over to Fayetteville, okay, and Lumberton. Now, Fayetteville is a military town. Lumberton, you've got the Lumbee Indians all in that area. And then everything in between, that's a lot, but there's a lot of rural areas, you know, right above the state line. See, it's like Nothingville. But that redistricting pissed those Republicans off so much. They were willing to break the law. When I looked at that map, I said, oh, that's what this is about. See, they drew in Fayetteville, they drew in Lumberton, and they drew in the Charlotte proper and or Charlotte suburbs. And folks who don't know this area, you don't understand it. Like, you know, it's pretty metro around Charlotte. Fayetteville's a little, you know, Fayetteville. Lumberton is just like a mid-sized type of city, kind of ruralish. You know, it's a military base near there. But all that in between, I mean, it's farms. It's beautiful country. But you see, those people don't want to be diluted because they've gotten used to being able to have their votes count more. And they think that's fair. As long as they're ahead, it's fair. Are you following me here?
Well, yeah, I am.
So when I just looked at that map, I was like, this is why they're so fucking. This is why they went crazy. They were willing to break the law because they can't win legally.
Right. And see the fact that this centers on absentee ballots.
Ugh.
Is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
Because historically, absentee ballots have been used in the African-American community to avoid harassment at the polls.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not really sure from looking at this particular case. I may be wrong in saying that they were monkey-wrenching African-American absentee ballots. It could be that they were going around to elderly white folks and dummying up ballots for them, not suppressing so much as, well, straight up fraud. Let's see. One person told the Charlotte Observer.
let me see. Where's the quote?
Which is a great paper, by the way.
Barbie Silvas, a Bladenboro resident, said people came around her apartment complex offering to help residents vote absentee. They would say, I'm here for McCray with the voting thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I want to know more about this. I would like to know what type of attire they had on. Did they have any buttons? Did they have any paraphernalia that would falsely identify them with a government entity? You know what I mean? Because why would you just listen to someone off the street?
Well, because voting's important, and, you know, you can't get down to the polls because you're feeling poorly or whatever. And you want to do your civic duty. So they say, I'm here for McCray with the voting thing. And maybe they've already done this before, and this guy's got a list that he goes through. In one instance, apparently they worked through an apartment complex.
Mm-hmm.
And see, now here's where it gets interesting. Reverend Mark Harris wasn't supposed to win.
Tax-free, right?
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. There was an incumbent running. There was an incumbent Republican running. But Mark Harris positioned himself as being the biggest maggot. And so he beat incumbent Representative Robert Pittenger back in the primary in May by 828 votes. Then he turns around and defeats Robert McCready, the Democratic nominee in the general, by 905 votes. Now, I'm no math whiz, and this certainly doesn't fall within statistical, you know, you couldn't run a statistical formula on it and say, well, yeah, it's the same damn thing. But 905 and 828, sounds like you got a few votes in your hip pocket, don't it?
It sure does. And you know, I'm gonna tell a little dirty secret. You know, you got a lot of black folk there's a lot of black folk that I've been exposed to who are willing to accept whatever some little young white person says if they're dressed a certain way. They're gonna think they're from the county or the city or something, and they're just gonna do what they help tell them to. I mean, I've seen that type of thing play out. I hate to say it, but do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
So there's that. And then, boy, the apartment complex, that's like easy pickings. God.
And the thing is, you know, he got 1-3 for insurance fraud, this one dude. Well, I mean, I just... And the nature of criminal law is such that if this thing does become a criminal affair, they'll go to these people who signed these absentee ballots working for Dallas, Dowless, and they'll say, "Listen, you're looking at some prison time here, but if you roll on Dallas, that'll look good for you." And so they were the active perpetrators of the fraud, and they'll probably walk, or nearly walk, in an effort to get this guy put away for a couple of years tops.
But how can the proper vote? And I hope so. But how can proper votes be sussed out? I mean, even if these people are held accountable by the law.
Well, in the case of the absentee ballots, they can be sussed by simply going one by one to those 1,300 people.
Who's going to pay for that?
Well, in the case of a criminal investigation, that's on the state.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought you were working toward a larger issue, and that is,
we need to once and for all, and I mentioned this the other night, and I used Australia as my example, and Robert, our buddy Robert in Australia, confirmed it for me. If you go and vote in Brisbane or Sydney or Melbourne or Perth, it's the same process in every place. Hundreds of miles, thousands of miles apart, because it is a national legal structure.
I was going there, but I had to get over my outrage. I had to set my outrage.
We need to nationalize our elections. And one of the things that the preclearance aspect of the Voting Rights Act did was it attempted to do that a little bit with some of the jurisdictions that had historically developed a nasty habit of trying to keep certain people from casting ballots.
Mm-hmm.
We need to Congress needs to preempt election laws, and we need a uniform election law that goes from the tip of Maine to California, from Puget Sound to Key fucking West, and from and from Fargo, North Dakota, to Corpus Christi, Texas.
I don't disagree, and I haven't thought it through enough yet, but I don't disagree, because if you look at your voter registration card, your information, everything is on there, your district, where you live, blah blah blah. And everything is digital now, so it really doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter physically where you vote. In fact, why should it? Because we can mail in votes. So all that shit is that's like old timey stuff. I mean, it's not even needed anymore. You shouldn't have to show up at your local polling place.
No, but I think people want a national election day. At least, maybe my generation, your generation does, because again, we're old school. We like going to the polls.
I like going to the polls.
But the Constitution needs to be amended away from this first Tuesday after the second Tuesday after the first Monday, you know, in November. That shit's got to go. It needs to be done on a Saturday, and it needs to be a national holiday. Let's throw parties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just victory parties, but, you know, make it a thing where, you know, we have picnics socializing and whatnot. Make it a literal celebration of democracy.
Well, I'm not going to rain on the parade. I agree, but I mean, there's a reason why a lot of people don't vote in the first place. But what you're saying is logical. But if we remember, the guy who has a pretty popular program, his initials are TH. Now, for years, he was playing this clip of Rehnquist saying, "I don't want everybody to vote. I don't want everyone to vote." You know, in other words, he let the cat out of the bag. They don't want
right.
everyone to vote.
So it's something we can it's something we can only do if we have both houses of Congress and the president.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one of the, you know, we're slowly but surely building a dream big list for 2020. And this is one of them.
Well, there's some change coming. There is some change coming. And I like what you said about, I'm glad you came around on Mitch McConnell, because I think he's going to go down in history as one of the most powerful people in a 15 or 20 year, well, 15 or 10 year time frame. But I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent. But you know, people are realizing how dangerous this shit is now. You know, and what you're talking about amendments. This is someplace everyone can agree, I think, is that we need to have a full medical battery of anyone who attempts to run for the United States Senate or to be president. A physical and a mental health review. Because we're dealing with someone who has mental health issues now in the White House, and it's going to become more crucial as the days goes on. Oh, God, did I just say that? As the days go on, yes.
Oh, and by the way, let me add in another fun little detail. A number of the witnesses, you know, the witnesses who signed the absentee ballots.
Mm-hmm.
They're kinfolk of Leslie McRae Dallas.
Throw them all in jail. I mean, I'm sorry. Let them go to trial. You know, they love law and order, don't they?
Oh, they're absolutely. So here's the whole list. Woody Hester witnessed witnessed 45 absentee ballots.
Okay, I'm sorry.
James Singletary witnessed 43 absentee ballots. Lisa Britt, aforementioned, witnessed 44 absentee ballots. According to Judd Legum, who has done a lot of the leg work on this, she shares...
Wait a minute. Operationally define what you're saying. What do you mean, witnessed?
When you go, you can... You have to witness an absentee ballot. You have to sign off on it.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Judd Legum, who's done the legwork on this, the way the scam worked was people would be paid to get absentee ballots, fill them out, and cast the votes for somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
So Woody Hester did 45 absentee ballots. James Singletary did 43. Lisa Britt did 44, and she just happens to share an address with Sandra Dallas. Ginger mm-hmm. Eason witnessed 31 ballots. Jessica Dallas witnessed 15. Cheryl Kinlaw witnessed 14. Deborah Edwards witnessed 11. And Sandra Dallas witnessed 10.
So they have a whole network of these moles doing this, is what's happening. Okay. Okay, that's just the ones we know about. Okay, that's what you mean.
The witness statement that I read a little bit, you know, required unless a notary
right.
public is the witness.
I understand, right.
Yeah. Witness right. one, Lisa Britt. Yeah. Witness two, James Singletary. Witness one, Lisa Britt. Witness two, James Singletary. Witness one, Lisa Britt. Witness two, James Singletary.
So this was like a cottage industry for these people. Okay. They got their little cash money. You know, like in the city, they call it walk-around money. You know, you go work the polls and you know, the councilmatic person, and they give you money and say, hey, you know, knock on doors and get people. I'm sorry, it's not quite the same thing, but okay.
And then
all right.
And then the ballots showed up in the word Judd Legum uses is clumps.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So,
unidentifiable masses, just clumps. Of shit.
So 44 minutes ago, Judd Legum updated his story that you can find at popular.info.
Oh, shit.
44 minutes ago, he updated it and said, after the publication of this story, Charlotte reporter Joe Bruno spoke with one of the witnesses, Ginger Eason. She admitted to being part of a ballot harvesting scheme. Bruno then visited Ginger Eason. She told him why her name appeared so many times as a witness. I was helping McRae pick up ballots. Eason said Leslie McRae Dallas paid her $75 to $100 a week to go around and pick up finished absentee ballots.
Oh, shit. Salary? Oh, my God. These motherfuckers got to go to prison, man. Fuck that.
Five of the witnesses list as their address 303 Pecan Street.
Hmm.
It turns out that's a one-bedroom apartment, Todd.
That's another layer of fraud. Oh, my God. Oh. Okay. So these... All right. Now, you know, we need to know now. We have to start investigating who are the judges. Who the state... This is going to have to go to North Carolina State Supreme Court. If it hasn't, you know, probably already went. I don't know. It's going to end up there. What do you think?
North Carolina Supreme Court, there has to be a justiciable question first. So later this month, they're having the North Carolina Board of Elections is having a hearing on this. And so people are going great guns trying to develop the evidence necessary for that hearing. If you want the answer to the question, it would probably be best to find out how many dozen Republicans are sitting on the North Carolina Board of Elections. I would imagine maybe Ron and Raleigh might know something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, David in South Carolina, Stan, points out that that part of North Carolina is dry counties, which means automatic corruption.
Oh, yeah. A lot of those areas right above South Carolina, you know, that's the deep country. I mean, like, there's nothing but farm. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, and right. Well, I tell you what, you want to talk about pretty. That bit of the North Carolina mountains that 26 goes through before you get to South Carolina.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that's beautiful mountains. I mean,
isn't that nice?
Yeah. But it's also isolated as hell. And it's probably Klan with a C, clannish as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, like I said, there's that photo that Agnes took going up 81 in Tennessee of that huge, some company had, probably in China, had to agree to make a Confederate flag that goddamn big. I mean, it was like one of those great, it was very nearly like one of those great goddamn big Carlotte American flags. And you know what I mean by that.
I do. I think I don't know if it was flying when I've been up through there, but
yeah, come on down to Thumbscrew Ford today. We got the biggest American flag in the whole dang region.
And I mean, it looks like it's dangerous if it comes off of the flagpole. It's almost gross.
Or the giant crosses by the side of the road. That if one of them some bitches comes down, somebody losing a house.
What is up with that? I don't like that. It makes me feel weird. I don't like that. When I'm going down the highway and I see a group of three or four like Klan-looking crosses on the highway, what is that? What is that shit about?
Well, most of them are put up by mega churches. At least that's the ones that I saw were.
Okay. Well, I'm talking about ones that had no name on them. They're just out there.
Well, no. I mean, they're sitting there. They're sitting there by a mega church. Now they're smallish. They're still big, but the ones and Chris and Agnes and I were talking about this over the weekend. If you see them along the side of the highways and the two on the sides are blue and the one in the middle is yellow, that's mm-hmm. that's a Coffin Daffer cross.
What does that mean?
They were put up by a guy named Coffin Daffer, who got filthy rich doing something in West Virginia. And said he had been told by the Lord God Almighty to go and put up crosses all over creation.
I've seen those on 85.
And then, but they're made out of lumber, they're made out of wood, like a proper cross would mm-hmm. be, not those fiberglass and styrofoam monstrosities
that the mega churches have. It would.
I mean, you could probably look up online and find it. Look up. Golly Bridge, West Virginia, crosses on a rock in a river. And at the confluence of the New and Golly Rivers to form at the very headwaters of the Great Kanawha, he went out in a damn boat and got up on that rock and put them three crosses up on the rock. But they're all over there. I mean, like to take I-79 from Charleston to Morgantown, you'll see them. Yeah, they're quite visible, but they're wood. Now mm-hmm. I'm looking at a video that Laurel just put up in the chat room of a giant cross in near Amarillo, Texas. That's different, but it's apparently a thing.
The ones that we
one of these days, maybe 100 years from now, They'll be putting up giant sniper rifles to remember John Kennedy. Or maybe we could put up giant AR-15s, you know, 10-story AR-15s everywhere that one of those has been used to destroy families in a National Ruble Association mass shooting.
Wow.
We buy guns. Jesus is Lord.
Bob, I know you're doing a great job as always, but I'm having, with my limited capacity here, I'm having trouble getting my mind around how this situation can be rectified in North Carolina. I mean, how do you redo an election?
Well, you can. They have been done. Election results have been thrown out, and there have been revotes in some elections. They're not very. There's not a lot of them, but there are. It would not be a first.
But what is more egregious than what you have been stating?
Well, how do you mean?
Well, we've got witnesses that have claimed they've been paid to engage in this type of activity to collect people's absentee ballots.
Well, but see, that's that one woman said that before she lawyered up. I ain't kidding.
Man, this is going to be ugly. But all right, it doesn't. I'm gonna tell you something. I haven't talked to my Trump friend up the street in God knows. I don't know when the last time I talked to him was. I talked to him today, and I didn't even purchase anything. I was gonna purchase something, and they didn't have what I wanted. And I was on my way out, and I said, "Oh, how about these indictments?" And he said, "Yeah, Hillary's going to jail." I said, "What?" I said, "I'm talking about all the people around Trump that are being indicted and going to prison."
Interesting you would raise that, because that was next. That was next on the list.
Well, it's got to be. Can I say this?
Yeah.
I don't know. Now, this is when he disputed me. This is when I got a little irritated, and I just walked out, and I told him. I said, "Well, you know, when you study some more, maybe we can have a conversation, but apparently, you know, you're not up to speed yet. And then when you get your facts together, then we can have a discussion." Because he didn't seem to understand that Rosenstein did release some information once or twice, not much. But what I was talking about was all the information that the Department of Justice used to keep re-upping the FISA warrants to surveil people like Carter Page and Donald Trump Jr., number one. That's what I'm really talking about, Donald Trump Jr. So, in other words, they say, I don't know what the time frame is, but let's say it's a month. So every month you have to go back to the court and say, well, we've developed more evidence and we want to extend our telephonic wiretapping, you know, email, telephone, anything electronic. And, you know, because you have to prove, well, we're getting substance here. We need more time. And they kept doing it. And they have it all laid out. They have it with newspaper clippings. And this is on C-SPAN's website. And this has been months. This is like 2 months ago. I mean, I don't know. I'm losing track of time, but it's been a while ago. It's out there. And you only have to read through it. And it's all PDF, all right, portable digital format. It's all on it. Third, fourth page, just like, oh, shit, he's been talking to Goldstein and Roger Stone, and they told him we have dirt on Hillary, and Don Trump Jr. said, oh, hell yeah, I want that. Yeah, great. And then here comes the Trump meeting. And then, so anyway, you know, then the ball starts rolling. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I don't see how he cannot be indicted. That's all I was going to say.
Well, hold on. It runs deeper than that, and if you can bear with me for a minute, I think I can sort through it. Let's start with a Trump, or let's start with a twoop from about 9 hours ago.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I will never testify against Trump. This statement was recently made by Roger Stone, essentially stating that he will not. Okay, first of all, no way Donald Trump wrote this.
This is probably what's his fuck who tweets for him. Dan Scavino. I will never testify against Trump. This statement was recently made by Roger Stone, essentially stating that he will not be forced by a rogue and out-of-control prosecutor to make up lies and stories about, and he puts quotes around, President Trump, close quotes. Nice to know that some people still have, and again, quotes, guts. Okay. 9 hours ago, also, Michael Cohen asks judge for no prison time. You mean he can do all of the terrible, unrelated to Trump things having to do with fraud, big loans, taxis, etc., and not serve a long prison term? He makes up stories to get a great and already reduced deal for himself and get his wife, second and next tweet, get his wife and father-in-law, who has the money, off, and he capitalizes, scot-free. He lied for this outcome and should, in my opinion, serve a full and complete sentence. Well, he kind of missed the fact that he also testified that he conspired with Donald Trump to pay off Stormy Daniels. There's that. And then when the tweet came out, everybody lost their minds over the capitalization of scot-free, as if scot-free was some person.
No, and, it's a phrase.
Capital S Scott, capital F free.
We understand that Dred Scott, that's that Negro who had the audacity to blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine.
But here's the funny thing. Tucked away in all of this is a little bit of a tell. Because, of course, I leave and shit blows up. So
it blew up, Bob. As soon as you locked your door, that shit blew up. You know it.
And so there I am toddling down the road, and I hear the Michael Cohen story about how Mueller has at least released another one of his so-called speaking indictments with one of these narratives about how it turned out, and we all know by now, Michael Cohen said that he committed perjury when he issued a statement to Congress saying that the Trump Tower negotiations ended in the spring when they actually continued well into the summer when it was pretty obvious Trump was going to be the nominee and et cetera. Okay. Well, here's where it gets interesting. This is the first mention of Michael Cohen's wife and father-in-law. Well, let's go back to a story by McClatchy from April 13th of this year. Okay?
I want to hear it.
Headline, sources, Mueller has evidence Cohen was in Prague in 2016 confirming part of dossier. The Justice Department special counsel has evidence that Donald Trump's personal lawyer and confidant, Michael Cohen, secretly made a late summer trip to Prague during the 2016 presidential campaign, according to two sources familiar with the matter. Now let's go back to the twoop. Reduced deal for himself and get his wife and father-in-law, who has the money, off scot-free.
Oh, man, what a dumbass. Oh, my God. This guy doesn't know when to shut the fuck up. Like me, I guess. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He just implicated those folks.
Well, it's not just that he implicated the folks. Remember when the dossier was released and he said... Yeah, there was no trip to Prague. Nobody went to Prague. I don't even know where Prague is.
And Cohen held up his passport. He said, "Joe, it's nothing on here. See? It's like, yeah, but it's the EU. You can go wherever you want, dummy. Once you get in the EU, you can go wherever you want. Right?
Well, but that, you know, two sources familiar with the matter. And meanwhile, of course, the going rumor mongering has been that for ages now, Cohen's father-in-law is mobbed up.
No way.
And by mobbed up, I mean the Eastern European mob.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Putin is engaging in some dirty business against Ukraine. Well, the mob with which Cohen's in-laws are mobbed up is the Ukrainian mob.
Oh, shit. Oh, man. This is messy. Oh, how messy this is. Holy cow. Woo! Oh, we're about to see some fireworks, Bob Kincaid. Oh, my God.
And that's why he's been shitting kittens with crocheted tails on Twitter today about that deal.
That is exactly against what his handler wants. His handler wants to own the Ukraine. And, oh, man, come on. There's so much that can happen with this. Oh, this is like a soap opera. Am I missing something here? Because
no, you're not.
Come on.
No, this is, yeah. He pouted in Argentina. He did by tweet, saying I was really eager to give a press conference about how awesome this has been and the great deals we've made, but out of respect for George H.W. Bush, I'll wait.
Can I throw a little non-grease into the gears here?
Go, man, go.
Did you hear where Deutsche Bank, they got raided?
Yeah, that was Thursday, too.
Now, we already know, everybody knows that they're like three times guilty in the past of laundering money.
Who was it that Justice Kennedy's boy worked for? Cooking up loans for Donald Trump?
Deutsche Bank.
Ding, 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 ding.
See, that's that link. That's why I was saying I hope those women stay on Kavanaugh, because Kennedy left that spot open for Kavanaugh because he got paid off through some laundered funds from Deutsche Bank. Well, I'm not saying he did. I'm just saying it's a possibility. It's a possibility. It aligns. What do you think, Bob?
I think things are about to get very, very real and very, very weird. And the thing that scares me out of all this is that when things get weird, things get dangerous. Cornered rats are nothing you want to get in a fight with. Especially not cornered rats with the nuclear football.
That's one of the reasons why I was frightened about having this sociopath as a president. He's down to a nub now. He's got nothing but brainstem left.
I am more convinced than ever, and we talked about this a little bit at the gathering this weekend, that we know for starters that it takes 2 hours to do his hair. I mean, Precious Ivanka said that. Okay?
Okay, so it's not funny. Okay.
Because it took her 2 hours to do Daddy's hair. But before you can get near his head, you have to get him stable enough to sit in a chair for 2 hours. So that means, I think the vast majority of those 6 hours or so, or if he's getting up at four, those 8 hours are involved, that executive time they talked about.
Yeah.
The first several hours of that are involved in getting the dosage right.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end, there's 2 hours to do his hair. That's how far gone he is.
Yes.
Warrior Witch in the chat room says, why the fuck does it take 2 hours to flip that corn fuzz over his bald spot? Like I said, this is one of those problems with the English language. Hair can be singular or plural in the case of doing one's hair. In this case, it's confusing because Donald Trump has one hair, and it's like 75 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be molded and sculpted and woven back and forth across. There's probably space-age robotics involved.
Oh, God. See, he should have been a Sikh, and he could have just wrapped his turban up, and it would have been simple.
Oh, but then he'd be a terrorist, right? At least according to him.
I hate when people say that. That's so stupid. The turban, they had a turban. So wait a minute. That's a lot of time, man. 2 hours? But you know what? I forgot about that. I remember that now. I remember that now. I do, early on. And they were joking about it, like, you know, and people laughed. It's really not. And you look at what's going on. We don't have time. Who's running the country? We're weak now, right? We are weak. We are weak looking.
So just to put a tidy, pretty little bow on it all, Todd.
Yeah. Okay.
To go back to the Cohen business. If it turns out there is definitive proof that Cohen was in Prague, then that is yet another aspect of the Steele dossier that has been proven to be true, to be factual.
Okay. You know what? You are very good at your craft. Now, this is what the associate that I converse with, who I do not agree with, that's one of the first things out of his mouth about Hillary Clinton was that the Steele dossier. What is it about the Steele dossier that they don't understand?
Well, Trump just said it's all fake. It's all fake. But if it all turns out to be true, then doesn't that probably mean that the PP tapes are true, too? Not that that would change any of the evangelicals' minds or anything. But it means the totality of the Steele dossier is correct, and that, yes, he became president because of an act of war perpetrated by the Russian Federation against the United States of America. Not that I want to go to war, but, you know, from all the times that, and people love to point to, well, you know, Bob, we fucked with people's elections, too. Right, and we don't have any problem saying that that was an act of war by the United States against the people of whatever country we're talking about.
Okay, but I would like to use your knowledge and move back just two steps. Everything that I've been hearing about the Steele dossier was that it was begun by the Republicans. They let it go. Steele had the data, as any private investigator would. You still have a file because you've done work, okay? And then he was approached by by Democratic operatives, because it's still opposition research. And so they just, you know, they paid him to take it over and carry on. Now, is that wrong? Can you fill in the gaps with that? Because people are going crazy over this, and it gets traction. And if you don't want to spend any time on
we're gonna find out that every worst thing we thought about Donald Trump is fucking true. We're gonna find out that he is an agent for a foreign adversarial power.
Damn it!
But don't get ahead of yourself. When we do, and remember, a bunch of this stuff is also in the Southern District of New York, and he can't necessarily fire his way out of that.
Well, that's why he cannot lead the presidency. Once he leaves, he's toast in a bunch of states, well, or Commonwealth, or wherever. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. All right. But how do you convince the maggots? Because like I said, I had an encounter today. I just had to walk away because, and he kept talking. I was like, well, he said, well, they didn't release anything. I said, well, Rosenstein did release a whole, they released.
Right. And the Steele dossier was not a Hillary Clinton joint. Okay. To use the Spike Lee terminology.
Mm-hmm.
It was started by Republicans.
Well, exactly.
And then when all the Republicans were gone and he was the nominee, it was continued by Democratic money.
Okay, I didn't really mean, I said exactly, but what I mean is that's the theory, that's what I've been operating under all this time, okay? But you have people who just don't accept that.
And I heard, as I listened to the public radio on the way down on Thursday, I heard a Republican, I forget which one, said, it is well past time that this Mueller investigation be wrapped up.
I heard that.
And I thought,
that.
You skeevy bastard, I guess you don't remember Iran-Contra or Watergate or God knows Whitewater that started in 1992 and didn't finish till 1997.
It's frightening. You know, I think they're so scared. If you could have seen the look on this guy's face, right? I mean, I know he doesn't believe me anyway, but, I mean, he got upset. He was very physically, like I said, these people live vicariously through Trump. You know, this is beyond politics now. This is the great white hope. I'm sorry, man. I'm not going to get off on this.
Well, no, and I should add, and it's probably just because it's an off election year, again, all the way from West Virginia to Atlanta, not a single Trump sign nowhere.
Mm.
But maybe, again, maybe that's just because, you know, they'll all come out later. On the other hand, however, Saturday, we had to run to the grocery store for some stuff that I figured I'd get in Atlanta instead of schlep all the way from West Virginia. Barbecue sauce makings and things like that. And got down there, and damnation... oh Jesus, it was pouring, Todd. I mean, did you guys get poured on Saturday?
It just stopped raining today.
This was how long can you tread water? Wow. And so it's pouring when we go in the store, and what's the first thing I see walking in? A 40-something woman wearing her Trump hat. And the same thing happens to me every time I see somebody. I have to fight the urge to just stop and stare.
Okay.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Well,
I mean,
I just want to
do that, you know, Richard Attenborough off in the brush kind of thing. Well,
exactly. Like,
I just wanted to see if she, you know, like worked a pinky up to the third knuckle digging around for the good boogers.
Or really went for the
gold and did an ass scratch with real gusto and aplomb. And I'm sorry, that's bigotry on my part, I guess.
But see, when you saw that hat, you prejudged that woman. Didn't you?
Yes, I did. And then Chris and I got away from her as quick as we could. And it was like she was following us because every aisle there was.
She smelled the liberal on you. Wait.
Wait a minute.
She's hunting you down like a dog.
Yeah. She smelled the liberal on you. That's good. That's damn good, Todd.
No, you know, it could have been that brisket.
There wasn't no brisket went.
Oh, shit.
No, it was pulled pork and turkey. Darlene, by the way, says, yeah, come on, Bob. We all know the PP tapes are true. Steele's been a reliable informant to the U.S. government for years. I don't have any problem acknowledging that the PP tapes are real. And I don't think most sane people do. But every time we get further confirmation of everything else in the dossier, they get a little bit more true. What's going to be, and this is strictly for entertainment value, what's going to be a hoot is if they ever get released and the maggots all say, well, so what? It's not like he was peeing. I mean, that's beautiful Russian whores. I'd like to watch a Russian whore pee-pee sometime, wouldn't you? MAGA.
What's wrong with that? If you had that money, you'd do that too.
Right. See?
But this is what we're dealing with. This is like my associate up that I was talking about today. Okay? Now, we made a $1 bet. This was way back. I might have been. It's almost a year. It's over a year now. I'll never get my dollar. I said, well, we finally had to boil it down. I said, okay, Trump won't go to prison, but there will be a bunch of people in his cabinet. So I go in today, and I'm like, well, what about the indictments? Well, I ain't had nothing to do with Russia. I said, but okay, it didn't have anything to do with Russia. Let's see. If it wasn't for this Russia investigation, would they be in prison? Would they be indicted?
He has to sing now. Cohen does. And you mentioned the passport a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my passport. I wasn't ever in Prague. There has been a considerable amount of information passed about Matt Osborne turned me on to this. It's possible that he, his wife, and his father-in-law used Israeli passports.
Oh, my God. Well, see, that's messed up. Now none of this is coming out. Mm-mm. That's not good. That's terrible news.
It was months back, but the guy that he met with in Prague... A Russian senator by the name of Konstantin Kosachev.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he found himself on the list of Russian oligarchs who are under sanctions now. And he was out there running his mouth about Syria, the Magnitsky Act, Trump, and among other things, vociferously denying that they had anything to do with meddling in the election.
I think something's about to blow up, Bob. And at the same time, look what Russia is like making no qualms about it. They're just taking over that warm water port now. They're taking over Ukraine. That's it.
Let me ask you a question then.
What?
I sort of inveighed against Mueller speculation a few nights ago, but it's irresistible, especially in this context. Could Robert Mueller be trying to push Trump into trying to fire him?
Man, you can't ask me that. I hadn't thought about that. That's so...
Because, he started out with the small fry and worked his way and has been working his way up the chain.
Oh, wait a minute. You said he wants to get he wants to be extricated so he doesn't have to deal with it because it's so deep now. He wants to be able to...
No, I'm saying I'm saying it's like he's standing at the burner. He's standing at the stove and he's got his hand on the burner control, and he just ticks up the heat a little bit, and he ticks it up a little bit more. Because what we found out in the past is when pressure's on,
okay,
Trump tends to obstruct justice and implicate himself.
Well, he has so much of a pattern. He has a quilt that would wrap the world. I mean, come on. This pattern of obstruction is endless. So what are you saying? Okay. Yeah. Well, but. Well, yeah. Just to set him crazy. Okay, so Trump, because he's already crazy. I mean, he's going to lose it pretty soon. Back to the Ritalin and the Adderall.
I've still got a $5 bill out at Harris in Reno that says, and I got some great odds, that says that eventually Donald Trump will appear naked in public playing with himself. Meanwhile, Megan says, I think Mueller's trying to get him to rage quit, otherwise known as pulling a Palin.
Just force him out, and then, you know what Trump will say.
Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa says, let's not forget that Putin's spokesman came out over the weekend and confirmed Russian interference in the 2016 election. But understand that no matter, and it ain't just maggots, okay? It's not just maggots. There is an element that if they showed the pee-pee to, well, I don't believe it.
One, exactly.
Robert Mueller's been ponerized. Robert Mueller's been ponerized.
I don't know if I should say this, but I'm really feeling like at this point in my life, I look around and, you know, things are not as rosy as we would like to think they are in terms of what's going on, the people we interact with. I don't know. I mean, we have all these shootings. You know, we joke around a lot on the radio, and I know I act crazy and all that. You know, I'm having fun. It's fun.
Yeah, we're just kicks.
But, you know, there's something else going on. The people have been dumbed down so much that they don't even believe what is just so obvious. And they don't even understand just a little bit of geopolitics. Just a little bit. Just a tiny, tiny bit. Because look at all this shit that Trump is doing. It's exactly what Russia would want, or in China, in North Korea. You know, all the nations that are not in the clique. Who want us to be weaker? Yeah. And then we have this weirdo buffoon, you know, who's been compromised, and I don't know, the whole.
But with the results of the House election,
yeah, good segue.
I mean, I think Pooty understands that did not bode well for him. Not that anything overt or dramatic is going to happen. It's just that he's not going to be able to finish his plan. So now he's trying to get as much as he can while he can. Remember, the dude is a crook. Okay, Trump is a hood. Putin is a full on crook.
Exactly.
A little ex-KGB pissant agent.
But Trump is
okay, but not no. Okay, not a pissant. I mean, the guy was fairly high up.
We don't know how much.
But he is first, foremost, and always KGB.
Yeah.
He's a spook. And he specializes in chaos.
Well, that was the other thing. You know, I'm curious. How many people are we going to see dropping dead pretty soon? See, Manafort, what the fuck?
Okay, by the way, you mentioned Manafort.
Let's remember something here. Manafort chose Pence. Paul Manafort chose Pence as Trump's running mate. So, Manafort must have had a reason.
Oh, Bob, I'm so glad you brought that up. This will take 10 seconds. Yes. Remember how we were always talking about, well, how deep is this? How many of these congressmen are corrupted, too? I mean, everybody's compromised. And now, you know, we're learning. It's probably a bunch of different types of compromisation, but most things are money, right? And so we're talking about when people go to Congress, if you're just a little bit crooked, you make a lot of money because you got insider trading. You got to do something with that money. You got to launder it, right? So why did Eric Prince, the Saudis, and the Americans meet in the Seychelles? See, the Saudis are the conduit. Like, in other words, the Russians knew the heat was on, maybe. They knew Deutsche Bank the heat was on. So they pushed the money to the Saudis because Trump will not give up the Saudis. He will not give up the Saudis. Period.
Okay, assuming that he is eventually out of office and alive at the same time, will he go to the joint for the set? And this goes back to the people who are doing the dirty work in North Carolina. Would you go to the joint for $100 a week and not take somebody with you?
So are you saying that's not plausible?
No, I'm not saying it's not plausible. I'm simply saying, would you, I mean, so what? What would keep him silent? Omerta? Because he can be safer in prison than out in the world where, you know, where the polonium umbrella tips are?
Trump is not really worried about himself. He's worried about his children, but his mental illness will not allow him to just operate like a normal person and just be quiet because he has other people that are depending on him.
Yeah, and Darlene agrees with you. She says, if not for the Mueller investigation, Manafort would have continued to sleaze the system until the day he croaked. It begs the question, how on earth did Manafort get away with what he's done for as long as he did it? Noting that you raise a superb point. And Darlene then says, how many more white-collar criminals are out there that haven't been arrested and brought to trial? The prospects are frightening. Well, look at, and I still say that this is going to be another angle that's going to blow up even further. The Russian money that was laundered through the National Rifle Association, and hence National Ruble Association, and the beneficiaries of NRA money in the Republican Party are legion, and way up that list is little old Lindsey Graham.
Oh, God. Oh, you can't come down here with that shit. Come on. Oh,
yeah.
Boy. Well, you know, I mean, you know, we're really maybe, and, you know, I'm really not, I'm only a conspiracy person when I really see a lot of data that points in a certain way. But when I saw that we had 7 congressmen go over to Russia, 4th of July, in that time frame, during that vacation, what in the hell are you doing?
Oh, and by the way, speaking of intelligence community spooks running countries, one of them is laying in state at the Capitol of the United States right now.
Oh, the crack king? King of crack.
Bush, yeah.
You know what? I don't want to be. I've had enough. That's all I can say. I mean,
I know.
And you weren't wrong. Anyway, I don't mean, listen, he lived a long, come on, 90-something? He lived a long, wonderful life.
94.
And I'm sure he did some wonderful things.
You know, I'm sorry. I can't help remembering everything that we learned over the years.
Maybe he was a decent guy, to one degree or another. You know, Hitler liked dogs. I don't think the dogs liked him, but that's and wow, that was cruel.
You know what? Good people do bad.
But I saw video footage of him playing basketball with a young W and a younger, you know, grandson. And they were playing at one of those little, you know, one of those little plastic play school hoops that you set up in the driveway with the little small size basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about back when W was still in his drinking days. blew up over, what was it, a croquet match? And got up in his daddy's face screaming, "Come on, come on. You want to go at me? Mano a mano, you and me, old man."
Oh, man.
But then again, I think fathers and sons, sooner or later, you're going to have a couple of those Donnybrooks along the way because it's in the nature of the mm-hmm. dynamic. Yeah.
Donnybrook. Yeah. Hey, you know what? You brought up a lot of good topics in your filibuster, and
well, there'll be enough to keep me awake tonight.
I don't know how you held it in. I don't know how you held it in.
Well, I didn't. You know, I didn't have to. I mean, we did a lot of yakking and talking over the course of the weekend. Oh, and I got to tell you one thing. On the way down, I drove right by a food city.
Oh, did you?
And I knew what they carried. So I ran into Food City and bought 6 packages of Kaneka.
They had it.
Food City always carries it, yeah. They didn't have all the varieties. They only had the original and the Cajun.
Okay.
And you'll be pleased to know this, I sent 2 vacuum-sealed, 1-pound packages home with Billable Rick.
No shit.
Because there's no way they're ever going to ship Kaneka sausage to California.
They won't do that.
And I sent 2 because one was for him and the other was for Tracy. So mm-hmm. Tracy's going to try some Kaneka. And I made Billable Rick swear he would get it to her. Not that he would eat 1 pound and decide, damn, that was good. I got to have some more of this. And, you know, sort of cabbage onto the
you
second.
You know what's funny? You can't fake it. You have it or you don't.
Yeah. So I thought that would do your heart good.
It's wonderful. I would have
sent some home with Chris, but I didn't think she could get it through through immigration.
Mm. Well, anyway, I'm glad, you know, folks made it, and that's wonderful. So, well, anyway, maybe somebody's trying to call in, right?
No. Well, yeah. Oh. I mean, here and there. Let me see. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Well.
Yeah, I'm not trying to dominate, man. I really don't want to.
No, it's okay. We had a lot of stuff to go over. We'll finish off here, I'm glad you did call because I thought over the it would have done my heart good for you to try the barbecue. And by the way, when I pulled it, I waited till the last minute to pull it. And when I pulled
you waited till it rested and everything.
Oh yeah.
Damn.
And then I separated the burnt ends from the inside meat.
Oh, you got the burnt end corners.
Oh yeah. Smoky and crispy and chewy.
Did you wrap up the corners and take them and just like that was like the hors d'oeuvre?
No. I did it all at the same time. You know, separated.
I mean, when they were done, I mean, did you package them up separately?
No.
Okay.
Because I took the whole butts with me, and then put them in a roaster for at like 250 degrees for hours, and mm-hmm. then pulled them. And they were so tender, I was able to reach in, you know, that shoulder blade bone?
Mm-hmm.
I just reached in and pulled it out.
It just came off easily? It
just came out.
Usually you have to pull because there's like a membrane there.
Not anymore. There wasn't because it's collagen. It's connective tissue, and it all melted away.
Oh man!
Melted into the meat.
I'm glad to hear that because let me see. The last time I heard your program, you were talking about that the smoke that was coming up from under the door, and I was like, oh my god! You were describing the smoke, and I could just see it. You know, the temperature inversion outside.
You get the feedback. Yeah, this feedback loop gets going where if you're using a smoking stone, the fat from the butts hits the hot smoking stone and immediately vaporizes and goes back up the chimney. It's righteous.
Man. See, that's a party. That's what I'm saying. When you have something like that, humans are funny. We're not that evolved. Because when you have, like, a fire or a nice smoker, people just congregate, just naturally make a circle.
Well, one last thing. I did violate my own personal rule because I had I had 2 quarts of Secret Sandwich Society pickle juice.
Okay.
And so I picked up a bottle of Bushmills.
Oh shit! Damn.
And a few people had a taste of the official hipster cocktail of the whitewater rafting area of West Virginia, namely the Pickleback. A shot of Irish whiskey followed by a little shot of pickle juice.
Man, that sounds like a great time.
It was right tasty, I can tell you.
I can smell the smoke.
All right, Todd. You take care. I think I got billable Rick rolling in here. So,
that's perfect. I want to hear what Rick has to say. What's up, Rick?
All right, take care, man.
All right, peace out.
Later. That wasn't supposed to go over, but it did. One thing real quick. It's 12 minutes before. Shirley's challenge has been on the table this evening. Glenn and John jumped right out on it and knocked us down to 180, but we've got $180 to go to finish off the challenge so that we get the month of December off to a roaring good start. So 18 folks at $10 a piece or whatever here at 12 minutes before the hour, and we will have completed Shirley's challenge. A couple of quick emails. Several North Carolinians jumping in. The North Carolina Board of Elections includes 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans, and 1 unaffiliated voter. Otherwise, it's apparently that was one answer to the question. 4 members split equally, 2 and 2, with a Republican as chair, according to Ron and Raleigh. So we shall see. We shall see. Let's run over and check in with Bill Little Rick. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Oh man, I'm still in Eastern Time. That flight back.
I bet that was hard.
Yeah, I flew out at 6:43 Eastern and arrived at 8:59 Pacific time.
Yeah, last night, right?
No, this morning.
Oh.
Morning. Yeah.
Oh, that must have been a real fun ride into Atlanta.
Oh yeah, well, a fun ride from Atlanta into back to L.A. Yeah, no, it's kicked my ass. I feel like it's.
When did you leave the mountains and go down for the airport? Were you close to the airport then last night?
Well, you know, we were like in one of those. We were not a mile and a half from the airport is where we stayed.
Okay,
But we were like in one of these food deserts, Bob.
Oh yeah.
The nearest Trader Joe's was like 22, 23 minutes away. We didn't want to go that far. And so we ended up like finally finding a Kroger's after like, you know, 2 or 3 tries of going to a grocery store to just get something decent. And so we didn't even eat till like, you know, shoot, I didn't finish my ice cream till probably 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, watching the great game last night, the Steelers against the Chargers.
I faded out on that one. I was so worn out last night by the time we pulled off to I was dead to the world.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I mean, I couldn't fall asleep after eating, like, you know, that easily. So I had to get up at like 4 in the morning, Eastern time. Probably got to bed about 12:15 and, you know, did some work on the plane, slept a little bit or tried to. And, yeah, I'm still at work. It's been kicking my ass, though. Yeah, the sausages are safe and sound, okay?
Okay.
So, Tracy, if you're out there.
Yeah, you've got to figure out a place to exchange the goods.
Yeah, we, you know, it's been too long since we got together. It's been 2 years, Bob, since we saw each other, if you could believe that, Tracy and I. Last time I saw her was at the Stephanie Miller show just before the 2016 election. I forget what she calls it, what her show is, but we saw her at the,
Sexy Liberal Tour.
Yeah, the Sexy Liberal Tour. Yeah, it was like a special election edition. It was like the Saturday before the Tuesday election, you know? And, that's the last time I've seen her. I can't believe it's gone that long, but, you know, I would really love to cook both pounds of that Kaneka at a joint barbecue with Stacy. And
Tracy,
What are your recommendations for like a mayonnaise? Maybe like a real hot mayonnaise with those, Bob? What do you think?
You know, I'm going to leave that up to you debating that with Tracy because I don't want to be within arm's reach of her when you suggest it.
Yeah, but it was wonderful to meet you and Steve from Georgistan and Malloy and Kathy and, you know, Chris from Germany, just everybody. And, I have to give a shout-out to a new friend of mine, Joe from Cleveland.
Joe was awesome. Everybody was awesome.
Yeah, everybody was awesome. But it's kind of a funny story because I was called by I call into Norman's show a lot of times during the week when I'm not listening to you, Bob. And I just wanted to listen tonight because of the whole shindig up there at the North Georgia Mountains. It was wonderful, though. But Joe knows Norman quite well. And Norman's program director, one time when I called in, said, hey, Rick, do you know Joe from Cleveland? He really likes you. He really likes your legal stuff. And he wants to know if you and Norman can go out to lunch together when he's in on the, you know, like from 9/11 till 9/16 of this year, whenever it was. And unfortunately, I had the brief from hell I was writing at the time, so I could not shake loose for any time. But apparently he and Norm got together and, you know, had lunch or whatever and, you know, got to know each other, you know, fairly well. And he's a great guy, though. I mean, very down to earth, very real, just like everybody was, though, Norm, you know. We recorded some really fun tributes to Malloy. I don't think he listens to this show, so I think it's okay to talk about it.
No, ixnay on the tributes tray.
Yeah, but let's just say that there was an illegal substance involved in the ladies' room where this was being filmed, okay?
Jesus, don't.
With three different people saying, Mike, keep it lit. Oh, but, yeah, you probably have told everybody how it was raining the whole time, but you know what? They should have stayed till Sunday because it was just a picture-perfect day.
Oh, Sunday was beautiful. I mean, we had to drive in it, but...
Yeah, and we went up to the state park. What is it, the Anectai or what is it? Oink?
Unicoi.
Yeah, I don't know why I can't remember that. Yeah, I should think of unicorn. Yeah, Unicoi, U-N-I-C-O-I. And they have a lake there, and Star and I walked around the lake like for like an hour or so. It took longer than that because I was taking pictures, but oh, it was just majestic, the beauty of the, you know, the still water with the trees in the background, getting the reflections on both sides, you know, the you know, the reflections of the trees and the water and so forth. Just
well, the funny thing was, it was still fall colors there. That's what blew my mind.
I know.
It's pretty stuff. Pretty stuff.
Yeah, very, very, very good stuff. Very good stuff.
Well, listen, I want a full review and report. And if you, yeah, if you, and if you, I mean, if you, and if you can't work out a joint deal, see what I did there. You can each try cooking it in your own way and see which way works out.
Okay, that sounds good. It's probably one of those things, Bob, that you can't blow it, right? Sort of like making omelets, right? You can't blow those.
You can mess it up, but it's hard.
Gotcha.
It's really good on a grill, but if you just put it in a pan with water on the stove and simmer it for a while, and then toward the end you poke it with a fork to let some of the grease run out, it's mm-hmm. awesome that way too.
Okay, so you and the Warrior Princess got home safe and sound, obviously.
And worn out. No, we got home today because we were so zonked from the drive. We knocked off about 8 o'clock last night.
Oh, okay.
And then finished the rest of the drive today.
Oh, where'd you stop over?
Northeast Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm so glad I made it.
It was a great pleasure meeting you. It was absolutely awesome. It was awesome meeting Steve and Miss Karen, mm-hmm. and Paul from Fremont and Joe and God.
Sam and Scott from Boston. Sam from Colorado.
Yeah, and Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry from
Arizona.
Yeah, Jerry, and I think Sherry, I think. Is it Jerry and Sherry? Yeah, Shelly. Jerry and Shelly, yeah. Yeah, from Arizona. And, it was just wonderful meeting everybody. So I'm so glad I did it. It wasn't cheap, but it was definitely well worth the price of admission, Bob.
Yeah, Jerry and Sheila were a delight. We talked solar power and a little college football. And just remember, Rick, the fourth quarter belongs to Alabama.
So Harris has them as what? Probably a 5-1 favorite to win the national championship.
I wouldn't be surprised. But
3-1.
It's not going. It's never as easy as anybody thinks. And that's why. And it's all just one long cliche. And that's why you have to play the game. And it's 11-on-11. And it's a matter of who wants it most, Rick. It's a matter of who wants it most. And you know, that ball's not round. It's got points on the end, and it bounces in a funny, funny way sometimes.
And the dogs just got dogged, I guess, right?
Well, you know, that fake punt. That fake punt, my God.
Yeah, you can't do that with a team that's got such a good offense as Alabama, you know?
And, well.
But you know what? If he'd have made it, he'd have been, lauded as, the most innovative coach since.
Like I said at the beginning of the game, all those Georgia fans were going, God, why did he call that?
Yeah.
And out in the celestial realm, God looked over at Bear Bryant and said, yeah, why did we call that, Bear?
There you go. Exactly. Oh, and I was going to also say, I've got something for Larry from Mr. Malloy. He was kind enough to sign a copy of the book for our friend Larry in Berkeley. So just in case he's listening, I'm going to mail a copy to him.
Sounds good. Well,
yeah.
Listen, you take care, Rick. I'm going to run here.
Okay.
And try to work one more call in since I was a little late to the mic this evening.
All right. You take care. I'll keep listening.
All right. I'll be waiting for the review, Rick.
Sounds good, man.
All right.
Take care.
Later. Bye now. Our buddy Billable Rick. Great time this weekend. Great time. And by the way, thank you to Charlene for jumping in. That means we're only down to 140 to go to finish off Shirley's Memorial Challenge for the month. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very much indeed. And let's run over and check in with Scott real quick. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I know we're into overtime, so I'll be as brief as I can be. But I've got a question for you about one of the topics that you were talking about earlier. I have a request for the Horn family. But first, I have a quick observation. I needed Band-Aids. So when I was out today, I bought a box of what I thought were okay Band-Aids at Ralph's. And here's my observation slash question about that. How do you fuck up a Band-Aid? This, I have never seen the like of this in terms of Band-Aid universe. It is basically thin plastic with an adhesive on it. And it doesn't stick worth a damn. Plus, it's like wrapping a little hunk of plastic.
Bought off-brand Band-Aids, did you?
Huh?
You bought off-brand Band-Aids, did you?
Well, the fucking Kroger brand, I mean, that's a reputable brand, but I'm taking the box back, except for the one on my finger. We can wrestle in the greens to settle that. Because, I mean, once you try it, there's no way to untry it. But that's neither here nor there. It's just like, how do
just
you...
Just be... Okay, we'll file this under... adhesive bandages are one of the things you pay for in the name brand.
Well, there you go. I will never buy a store brand again, although the Target brand is quite good, but I didn't go to Target. Fool that I am. Okay. My question about the earlier topic, this guy who was the contractor who hired out the cute little girl and the others to do the ballot mischief. Did I understand correctly that he was a convicted criminal, possibly a felon?
Yes, yes, you did. You got that right.
I don't know what body or what agency or what authority covers such things, but how could a convicted felon be allowed to have anything to do with anything related to the voting process?
It's a good question, but I don't know. I don't know that there's a bar on it, because he wasn't convicted of anything having to do with voting. He was convicted of insurance fraud.
Yeah, but if you're a convicted felon, there are certain things, like, I don't know, in the case of licenses, which involve certain,
Scott, he was just doing get out the vote.
Well, somebody needs to look at that if and when the Democrats ever take over the state down there, which I'll be an old man by the time that happens. Because there's a word that I love, and so few people use it. I like to use it a lot. That whole thing was hinky from the get-go. Hinky, I think, is a word that we need to use more, because God knows there's a lot of hinkiness going on from Trump on down. But anyway, I hope that is covered. Didn't you say there's a body that's investigating these shenanigans?
Yeah, the North Carolina Board of Elections.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully someone will have sense enough to ask the question that I posed, or at least say, well, wait a minute, maybe we need to be more selective in terms of who gets to be in proximity to the process, given, especially if it turns out that there was crookedness going on. But anyway, here's my request, and this is kind of a serious request for you and the rest of the Horn family. A little less than a week ago, I began experiencing some rather attention-grabbing physical symptoms. And I did what most people do. I immediately went to Google and Googled the symptom. And among the results that came up was one that seemed quite reputable. It involved listing 20, count them, 20 different things that could cause the symptom that I'm displaying or presenting, none of which inspired me in terms of happiness potential or fun potential. So I immediately called the health place and set up an appointment, and I went Friday, and they took some blood, and they had me do another test, and they referred me to a specialist, and that's in the works. So hopefully I'll be able to set something up tomorrow or Wednesday to get that underway for more exhaustive tests. And I hear they are exhausting. So, but it's a thing having to do with my innards. So here's the request to the Horn family. Kindly send all the positive energy and positive, positive energy that you can, and direct them from above my knees and below my neck. I think that pretty much covers the area that that could be troublesome. And I'm keeping up, you know, a happy, upbeat, positive attitude, because what else can you do? There's no sense in fretting. But these folks have proven themselves over the couple of years that I've been listening to this program to be caring people, interested people, intelligent people, but most of all, caring people. And
you requested it, and it has happened.
Well, okay, and I knew that it would, and I know that you don't have to ask twice for this crew. Now, one thing before I go, because my ears perked right up, even under my stocking cap, when you were talking to Rick about what kind of secret sauce to put on the Kaneka in regards to Tracy, and when that dreaded M word was uttered, I don't want to be anywhere near when Rick mentions the M word to Tracy, because if she can lift it, she's going to take a bag of charcoal, one of them big 15-pound bags, and whop him upside the head. And you know it, and I know it, and I hope if Rick.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, I don't know if I want to be on the same continent with that. Billable Rick does that, and I don't think his safety's guaranteed at that point.
Well, and see, the thing is, there's no sense in stirring up that kind of trouble, and Rick, as a licensed professional, should know the fuck better. You know? And what was the thing that, was it Todd that said it, that caused you to laugh out loud about,
smelled the liberal on you?
That is a resounding cowbell, if you didn't do it already.
Oh, I did.
That's cowbells from here until the cows literally come home at the sound of the bell. That was the best line I've heard.
You know, a maggot, a maggot can smell liberal.
Yeah, it's like, and the image that came to mind was from the 1968 film starring Paul Newman and George Kennedy, Cool Hand Luke, when they sent the dogs out to look for Luke, who had run off. You remember? Have you ever seen that movie?
Cool Hand God, Luke? I love Cool Hand Luke. I can eat 50 eggs.
And he, almost as good as the movie, was the Mad Magazine parody of Cool Hand Luke. And the artwork, I think Mort Drucker did the artwork where he's down to egg number 48 or something, and his eyes are real big and his cheeks are real big. And his belly is real big, and he's got just a face of dread at those last two eggs. So, anyway, I'm going to rent that. I'm going to.
Well, listen,
that.
I hope you're feeling okay, man. I really, really do.
The weird thing is, other than what got my attention, I told you this a couple of weeks ago when you were asking how I was doing. You were thinking that I had been out of touch and something was wrong. I don't, you know, in the past 10 years, I haven't felt as good as I've been feeling lately in terms of my attitude and my...
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah. You know, just my attitude and my overall physical. But then again, who says the universe doesn't have a twisted sense of fucking humor? So we'll see where this
goes. All right. Well, you put me in a bind here, Scott. What am I supposed to say? Stop feeling so fucking good?
No, I just wanted to put it out there because I know the one.
You're screwed, Scott.
Oh God! Now here we go. Here we go. See, I don't want nothing drastic to be happening. You know, walking from one room to another, cosmically speaking, because I got too much at stake here. I want to see how Trump turns out, and I want to see how you know, the subsequent seasons of Better Call Saul turnout. And plus, when I was a kid, going over to D.C. to the Magic Store on the bus, even before the subway, one day I was, before I went into the magic shop, I went upstairs to the palm reader and gave her 50 cents to answer, to tell me three things. And she told me one thing, which I forgot. And she told me that I was expecting an important piece of mail, which I was, as a 9 or 10 year old. But the third thing she told me, I've been counting on all these many years. She told me, you're going to live to be 89. Well, I just turned 64 6 months ago, and damn it, I didn't get a receipt or a reference number, who to call in case the palm reading prognostication didn't come true. She's probably long gone anyway. But I'm that 89 thing, I've been hanging on to that. Because I believe in those types of prognostications. I'm as silver as a judge, just stumbling over my words. But anyway, I'm glad you're back. It sounded like you guys had a hell of a time.
And we did. It was a lovely getaway.
You need to make a promise. See, you've been to New Orleans and you've been to the North Georgia Mountains. You need to make a West Coast trip, Bob. Hint, hint.
Well, I know I do. And I want to.
I tell you, San Diego is a garden spot.
See, I want to start in San Diego and work my way to Seattle, and just do a series of broadcasts all along the way.
Well, let us focus our energies and attentions toward that too, because you guys had so much fun. I was jealous.
I mean, I want to do a broadcast from from San Diego, from L.A., I want to do a broadcast in San Francisco. I want to do a broadcast from the Man Cave up there in Sparkyville and just work my way up the coast.
Well, we would love it as much as you would, if not more, because especially in the dead of winter, if you can come out here, oh, you won't want to leave, Bob.
Well, I know. I mean, hell, I fell in love with San Francisco in freaking January, okay?
Yeah, I know. It's got that lure. I've never been up there, but I've heard tell that it's but Tony Bennett wasn't the only one to lose his heart up there.
No kidding.
Put it that
exactly.
way. But anyway, I'm so glad you all made it down and back and had a good time, because as hard as you go at it, it's good for you to get some R&R.
And by the way, Billable Rick has awarded you a cowbell. You've been awarded a cowbell for, as a licensed professional, Billable Rick should know better.
Well, I think one of the Watergate prosecutors coined that phrase many moons ago, because there were a lot of licensed professionals that should have known better in that deal. And we'll see something like that play out in the present time soon, because the shit is going to be hitting the fan in pretty short order.
I think that it's just a notch at a time on the burner control. Just let's test that old aphorism about frogs in water.
Mm-hmm.
With Julius Geezer as the frog. See how long it takes before he realizes that he's in a pot of boiling water.
Well, I think he knows he's headed there. There's no way out with this deal, you know, other than croaking, to use a frog noise. If he should just be so stressed out that, you know, he drops dead from just the stress of it. Because he makes believe, oh, stress, I thrive on stress. I eat stress with gravy on it, you know. But we know that that's not true, because like you said earlier, we've seen him react under stress, and it's not pretty. Only in times past, he wasn't fucking president. Like you said, with the damn nuclear football and the coach, God help us. We are all screwed, Bob.
Kind of hard to avoid coming to that conclusion, isn't it, Scott?
Yeah, it sure is.
All right. Well, listen, you get to feeling better. You've got the good wishes of the entire Horn Family Community Congregation behind you, brother.
Well, I'll let you know what I find out. I'm not going to send you that list because there's no need in scaring you.
Yeah, please don't.
But I sent it to my brother by email, my older brother, and he's afraid to open it. So who knows?
And remind me somewhere along the way to try to recreate. Maybe I'll have to get her on the line to do it. It was just a silly conversation at the end of a day between Agnes and Tara Devlin and me.
That was a half.
Well, it turned out I texted Tara this morning with a little snippet of it, and she texted back and said, it's what Tracy said. Get out of my brain, Bob. Because she said, I was just sitting here laughing quietly to myself about that. Okay, I'll go ahead and give it away. We were talking about the differences between North and South and I made some offhand comment about you are from New York because Tara is unmistakably a New Yorker.
See, that's almost as dangerous as the dreaded M word around Tracy.
And I can smell liberals, Bob. I can smell the liberal on you. And Tara, who is a comedian in her own right, looks at us and said, "Yeah, you with your big city ways and your flushing and your wiping and all." And so all the way up the road, Agnes and I are looking at each other, throwing ourselves into fits of laughter. you with your flushing and wiping.
You slicker, you city dude.
Getting all uppity with your big city ways.
Yeah.
So when Agnes walked out of the shower this morning, I looked at her and said, you with your big city ways and your showering and bathing.
And it ain't even Saturday.
Right.
Oh, man. Oh, well, I'm glad you're back. You go away and all hell breaks loose.
If things are getting boring, all I have to do is leave for a little bit.
Yeah. We'll stick around for a while, at least until we get this Trump thing under control.
Oh, yeah.
Because I guarantee you, Bob, it's going to get crazier than shit. In pretty short order.
By December 31st, when they drop the ball in Times Square, it may be accompanied by an indictment when it gets to the bottom.
Yeah. Well, and Trump, I mean, he's going to be like Daffy Duck, going woo-woo, woo-woo, bouncing around the surface of the water before it's all over.
Naked as a Jay Burden playing with himself. I'm telling you, it's coming.
There you go. Yeah, that money is as good as got. So...
I got fantastic fucking odds on that. I got to tell you, it was that $5 could fund the Horn forever.
There you go. I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah, if only
a number of levels. In this case,
if only that were true. But if any of you are into gambling, this is just a little tip. Not a bunch of money, take a fiver. And find your, over in the UK, they'll bet on birds on a wire in the UK. Wander into a parlor in the UK and put a fiver on Trump winds up running naked in public playing with himself. It could be big. I'm telling you, it could be big. The payoff, not the thing he's playing with, okay? Just so we're clear.
No. Nothing would make that thing any bigger.
Yeah, you with your big city ways and your flushing and wiping.
All right, Bob.
All right, see you, Scott. Feel better, man.
I feel great. I just want to know what the hell's going on, because if I know what the tune is, I can dance to it. I've been through two divorces, a month of homelessness, and a fucking brain tumor surgery. So I've become...
If you've already checked brain tumor off...
Yeah. Well, that's the wrong end in the case of what we're dealing with.
Oh, dear.
But what I'm saying is, well, not quite that end, but getting there. Basically, I'm adept at dancing. If I'm not adept at anything else, I'm adept at dancing with whatever comes my way. I just need to know the tune well enough to where I can, like those painted feet on the floor at the Arthur Murray Dance Academy, so that I can be in step with whatever the tune is.
Cha-cha-cha, by God.
There you go. Roomba. What's a Roomba? No, that's the thing that cleans the floor.
Yeah, that's a robot now. That's, yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway. Take care. Rest up. Gird your loins, because the fun is just beginning.
Fill your hands, you son of a bitch. Yeah.
All right, Bob.
All right. See you, Scott. Later.
Take care, man.
Bye now. And so that brings us to the close of the program. I made up for the late start. And by Jove, well, hopefully folks will I didn't run anybody off, and we'll be back and continue the merriment for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Meanwhile, if you've listened all the way to the end and you're listening to the podcast, well, we pulled up $140 short on Shirley's challenge. So if any of the podcast folks want to help knock that out, you're more than welcome. I hate to see a good challenge like that sort of die on the table, because there's a lot of goodwill that goes behind it. So thanks, everybody. It's awfully good to be back. Thank you very kindly. Thank you for your patience in waiting while I was gone. Nobody left their computers for, 5 days, did they? No. And so get back at it tomorrow. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little ongoing conversation. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.